Hey guys, it's Johnny here, and welcome to another episode on the upside of being British Chinese. And crikey, it has been like a year since I made the last episode. I'm really sorry about that. It has been an epic several months for all of us. I ran for parliament. I had a bunch of different jobs and career stuff happening. And then, of course, we had this pandemic. And so it's been a bit of a roller coaster, and there's all these concerns also about, discrimination, about the uncertainty of global politics. It's been very, very scary. And I've been thinking quite carefully about what do I do with this podcast, because it's been amazing the response I had in the first few episodes. I've been getting emails and messages. I was even reached out to comment on some university papers, which I'll talk more about in the future. And we've even got people reaching out to create their own podcast, such as Yellow Peapod, which is a fantastic podcast about the British Chinese community, and something that I definitely encourage viewers and listeners to check out. I've also been working on other projects, creative projects, more social media stuff, some YouTube videos, which is a lot of work. But I wanted to go back to the podcast as well, because it's a more relaxed format to talk about some deep conversations. And I created this podcast mainly to talk about kind of uplifting thoughts. And so I couldn't think of anyone more uplifting than Rilly Chen. And this podcast is going to be a conversation with her. She's a really amazing, and she will be a little bit modest in the podcast, but she's a really amazing person. She's literally hang out with like Jack Ma. She's traveled the world. She is British Chinese, but she's chosen to work in China as well as in Singapore beforehand. And so we did this call through Zoom. We had our own mic set up, but bear with us. It's always a bit tricky trying to do this not in person. But I hope that there is some real value in listening to her experience and her insight, and a bit of a conversation about being British Chinese, but also wider things as well. And I reckon no matter what background you are, you'll really resonate with this. And I just want to say also that podcasting has really grown, and I think it's because maybe as people are stuck at home, people are enjoying listening to more things, especially if they're doing chores or if they're washing the dishes, etc. It's certainly something that I've enjoyed. So if you know any cool podcasts that I should listen to, then please do let me know. And I'd love to share ideas and podcasts around. All right, enjoy this podcast. Hey, Rilly, how are you doing?
Hi, Johnny.
It is so good to speak to you, Rilly. We're currently speaking from two ends of the world, so I'm currently in London. And really, where are you at the moment? Because I always get lost. Which part of China, or even if you are in China, right? Because sometimes you're not.
I am currently in Guangzhou, which is a city that's close to Hong Kong. And I'm currently in the most ancient hotel in Guangzhou, overlooking a beautiful view of the river.
Oh, wow. Okay. Rilly's currently showing me her room, which is gorgeous. I have the beauty of a white plain wall. But hey, I'm not complaining. That's good enough for me. And we're so excited to do this podcast and really to bring back this podcast that I worked on last year about the upside of being British Chinese. And I couldn't think of anyone better to speak to than someone like Rilly. Rilly is always positive, super inspiring within the British Chinese community. And she has a fantastic story, including the fact that she's currently working in one of the top technology companies, Alibaba. And we really want to explore the journey from being a British Chinese person, going back to China, and maybe the temptation to come back as well. So really, how yeah, she's laughing. It would be great if you could just give a little introduction about yourself, your background, like where were you born? How did you get to where you are today?
Okay, so first of all, thank you so much for all the compliments, Johnny.
I'm just a very, very normal person that have taken a long, long way around in many countries. So I am originally from China. I was born in China in a city called Harbin. I moved to the UK at the age of 9 and grew up in the UK in a wonderful place called Essex, and had the pleasure of studying history at Oxford University. So it's a very non-Asian, non-traditional subject to study if you're a Chinese person. More useful subjects, maybe like engineering or maths. On graduating, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and I explored a bunch of different options. By chance, I was working for a conference research company that sent me on a project to Singapore. And because of that project, I kind of got to meet with a bunch of people who are working in the internet industry in the late 2013. I just thought it was really exciting and wanted to, you know, explore something new, and kind of also left the city for a boy. So I moved to Singapore. at the beginning of 2014, and joined a place called Rocket Internet, which was really exciting. It was an internet startup covering Southeast Asia. From there, I was building up this internet startup, flying around Southeast Asia across the six countries for a couple of years, and then joined Alibaba almost 3 years ago now, and have been working in both Hangzhou, which is Alibaba's headquarters, and then after that in Shanghai for about a year and a half recently. So it's been many different cities, lots of countries, but I guess it's been a very interesting journey. Yeah.
I mean, it's fantastic. It's a really international journey. And I'm sure you have the kind of empathy and the understanding of different cultures as a result of that. I wanted to ask, like, do you feel British Chinese, or do you feel a bit lost, or do you kind of switch personalities depending on the country you're in? How do you compute with all this kind of variable culture clash that you're constantly with?
Yeah, I think, you know, with anyone growing up
as a minority in the UK, or if you have part of a minority culture, I always felt like I led a double life, right, when I was growing up in the UK, in the sense that nobody fully understood my Chinese side and nobody fully understood my British side. So I was always being kind of this cultural bridge, as you would, but also kind of anomaly, right? And I think it was also great to have a bunch of British Chinese friends who could connect with that. But as you could think about, you know, growing up in Essex, it was a super white community. I think it was
one other Chinese family in the entire school.
So it was a very different experience. And I think I always, the truth is, right, I always wanted to fit in when I was growing up, and I wanted to be just like everyone else. And I was always explaining Jay Chou's lyrics to people, translating that into English and being like, this is my love for this, you know, random Chinese pop star. But then I think having moved back to Asia and been working in Shanghai and working in, you know, Southeast Asia for the last couple of years, especially recently, I've realized that what's different about you is also what's unique about you, right? So sometimes if you think these are the things that doesn't make me fit into part of the bigger group, it's also your bigger strength. And I think having been working on the globalization of Alibaba, especially recently in the last 2-3 years, I've realized that there's a lot of things I can add because of this odd background, right? The fact that I'm not fully Chinese and not fully British, but also both in that sense. So I think that's been interesting. It's been challenging both on a personal perspective, but also on a career perspective. But I think coming to age of now where I am right now, I think I've been able to fully embrace and be fully, you know, just fully own that. And I think that's part of growing up and really becoming who you are as a person.
I know that before you traveled around East Asia, of course, you worked in London for a bit. And I wondered, did you ever face a feeling of either, I guess, discrimination or the feeling of being other, or that your career might be held back? And would you say that was maybe one of the factors why you tried going elsewhere? Because I reckon a lot of our audience might
be thinking. I think the one thing about
working in the UK is that people don't always see me first as really Chen, right? People see you first and the first impression is, here's an Asian girl. And I think you have conquer the stereotypes people have when they first look at your face and see your ethnicity, and then to get to know you and think, okay, you are really, or you are whatever person, and here's what you bring to the table. And I think that's probably the biggest
that I felt like working in Asia, because obviously everyone looks like me,
conquer that you are Chinese or you're Asian, there's a stereotype. So I think that's probably the biggest thing that I felt like when I was working in the UK. But I think as everybody who is British Chinese grew up in the UK will know, right? Like, you kind of understand how to be a minority, how to work around the stereotype, how to push a stereotype. And I think that's something that every single person who is British Chinese has to kind of deal with. But for our generation, you're also acting as role models and as a bigger community for people who are younger than you, and for those who are looking up to you and growing up in this, you know, wider society. So it's a very important part to both play and also establish and understand how you are perceived will have a wider impact to people like you in the community as well.
Nice. And how did you find these jobs abroad? Was it just an online search? Did you know somebody? Was there some kind of networking required? If you were British, if you imagine someone who's British Chinese in London and they get interested to work in East Asia, how did that process happen in the first place?
I was pretty lucky in terms of my first two jobs. Most of that was through networks, so it was people I worked with. So, you know, I got the second job because I was working with them on a research project, interviews, and then kind of that's where things led on to. For the Alibaba job, there was a very intensive interview process. Actually, I applied, and it was like a 3-day interview process, and it was a, you know, a bunch of different tests. But having said that, I think, you know, really leverage on your community.
But
here is an open invitation to, you know, anyone who's interested really to know more about working in an internet company in China or in Southeast Asia. Feel free to find me via LinkedIn, Facebook, you know, whatever, and I'll be very happy to offer advice. And I think also having said that, I think, Johnny, you've done a great job, you know, along with others to build a strong British Chinese community. And that's something that I'm personally very passionate about, as we have discussed, is that obviously we're not young anymore, right? We're really quite old now. But, you know, for the 15-year-old, 16-year-old, I don't know however old you are, you know, maybe even you are our age, you might be thinking about making that leap of jump, taking a leap of faith, right, to try something different. That's probably the hardest part. The first step out is the hardest part, and thinking, oh, can I succeed, right? Like, you know, that's what I always thought. I think that's something to share with everybody, is that even though I was fluent in Mandarin, I always had this really strong fear of working in China, right? Because you kind of see it from far away and you think, wow, I can never, you know, work professionally there because everything's much more complicated, the country is huge, there's so much more nuances, and you hear all these insane stories. And honestly, China's filled with insane stories. And you just think, okay, this is not for me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I know my kind of community in the UK, I know how to act, I know everything around here, and things make sense, it's familiar. And then do I want to really take that leap of faith and, you know, try something completely new? And maybe you try it and it's not for you. You know, I have met a lot of really cool American Chinese, American Taiwanese people who have moved from the States to try out in Shanghai for 6 months, they've moved back and said, oh, hey, I realized like I'm so much more American than Chinese, right? And I really enjoy being in America, which is totally fun as well. I think it's just something that it's different for everyone. And if something you want to try, you know, this is never too late to start, really.
Well, firstly, thank you very much for saying good things about me, which I always appreciate. But secondly, also to offer your support to the community. We'll make sure that at the end of this, that your links and your social media accounts are public and you'll get a flood of fans coming your way. I wondered, for both your first job in the near the Singapore area and then of course the Alibaba, whether you needed to have excellent Chinese Mandarin speaking and writing skills. And I wondered, because sometimes I hear you only need English, but there's also this additional value of being able to write and read, not just in terms of the actual work, but also in integrating with the environment. Because I know your Chinese
is
pretty
good.
Yeah,
so I think it really depends on what type of organization you work for, right? I think if you work in... So it's very different if you work in mainland China. Also, it's very different if you work in Beijing or Shanghai compared to Hong Kong, Singapore, or other type of Asian countries. So I think, you know, Singapore, Hong Kong, you're definitely fine if you just speak English. But if you want to work in mainland China, it's definitely a huge plus to speak Mandarin. And then having said that, I also know tons of people in Shanghai who don't speak any Chinese, and they're learning Chinese and they live in Shanghai. So it really depends on the type of organization, type of career and background that you have. If you're learning Mandarin as an adult, I'm not saying it's not impossible. I know people that started learning when they were 21, right? British English guys. And they're now completely fluent after 5 years. But obviously, that's taken a lot of time and effort. So I think that's something that each person has to evaluate, given their time, background, ROI. But if you are someone who's a teenager and going to Sunday school now, I remember that when I was going to Sunday Chinese school. It might seem really boring, but don't give up on that. It was going to be useful later on. So,
Oh, that's really good advice. I did wish I paid more attention to my Sunday school, which was totally not what I did. Let's go to the present day. So firstly, do you enjoy Shanghai? How much time do you actually spend in Shanghai? Because you travel around the region all the time. Like, what's it like to live there? What's it like in terms of your social life? How many friends have you made?
How many friends have I made? Okay,
Millions,
I would say Shanghai is at this really unique juncture of the exploration of a new type of local Chinese kids who are growing up, right? Many of my friends have studied abroad, a lot of them in the UK, Australia, the US. And I also have many friends who are Swiss, British, American, and they speak fluent Chinese for various reasons. They're living in Shanghai. So actually, maybe it's just kind of selection bias, but all of the people I know who are living in Shanghai really come from a really interesting, unique background. And pretty much everyone is bilingual of some sorts, which is really great because you can discuss like, oh, the latest, you know, maybe like Asian American pop music. And then the next thing you're talking about, I don't know, drinking tea in the 5 p.m. in the afternoon. So the whole like jump in this cross-barrier, cross-cultural thing is quite high in Shanghai. And I think like if anyone who hasn't been to mainland China yet, I think the biggest thing about Shanghai and Beijing right now is really the boom and the penetration of internet and kind of the application of internet's lifestyle you see everywhere, right? So I'll give you an example, right? I never take a wallet out. Like, I don't even use a wallet in China, which always has issues like back in London because I don't like remember to bring out my wallet because I can go everywhere and pay with a mobile phone. At least you have a QR code and anything I go, like, you know, taking a taxi, paying for the bus, taking the MRT, taking the subway, underground, like all of these things can just be done on your mobile phone. And I think that's something which is incredible to experience for anyone that hasn't been to mainland China. So the leapfrogging and you know, the lifestyle that you currently have right now, that's really exciting. Yeah.
And of course, it's married up with the fact that you have a really cool job. I'd love for you to drill down a little bit more on your day-to-day in Alibaba, because I have seen you, not just in social media, but in newspapers, of you hosting weddings of literally hundreds of people with Jack Ma. I mean, it's the craziest thing I've ever seen online. So it must have been, I think that was Alibaba Day, is that right? Or Alibaba Wedding Day? Tell me more about that and tell me about the day-to-day. Like, what do you do and how does your routine work in the day-to-day basis?
I've had the pleasure, really like the honor of being on stage with Jack quite a few times. The very first time was on Alibaba's 18th anniversary. So that was to celebrate the establishment of Alibaba, you know, becoming an adult, as you would. And we had 40,000 people in a stadium. That's and amazing. I was the master for that show, which is just, that was incredible. That was really like a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And then since then, I presented a whole bunch of things from Alibaba Wedding Day, kind of, you know, competing conference, charity gala. So that's been really, really cool. So that was when I was doing this leadership program as part of that in first year. Really fun. And then currently, I work at Ant Financial on the globalization team. So my jobs involve working with the portfolio companies we have invested in and then really trying to grow their synergies and work on their synergies to generate more value for Ant Financial and Alibaba ecosystem.
I mean, that sounds awesome. So far, it's been a lot of upside.
I mean, the reality also is, you know, very open on this on the podcast is these things get really lonely, right? You know, I have my family, my parents live in the UK, and I have great friends who are in the UK. I, you know, really like a lot of things about British culture, the UK. I miss London a lot, and I miss my family a lot. And I think, just saying to you guys, saying to Johnny, right, and other friends, it's so funny because with COVID, and because of the ban and restrictions on international travel, this has been the longest time that I haven't traveled for work. And it's only been, I don't know, 2 months, 2.5 months. And I've never, ever, you know, slept in my bed in Shanghai consecutively for more than like 30 days. Like, this is the longest time because usually I'm traveling 3 weeks out of the month and I'm in different locations internationally. And, you know, it seemed really glamorous and really fun for like the first 6 months. And then by the seventh time that you're landing in Manila at 2 a.m., there's a storm outside and you're alone. You're like trying to get a taxi and, you know, you only have like whatever, very limited cash on you. So there's a lot of also downsides, right, for living this lifestyle. But I guess, you know, you have to give up some to experience some. So
yeah, I mean, that's a very honest analysis. I think our viewers do value that because there's so much pressure to live the ideal life. And I certainly look at your kind of life and go, God, that sounds amazing. The places you're going, the people you're meeting, and being in an area where, you know, economic growth and opportunity, but to also look at the downside, I think, is it gives an authentic view of the world, because there is no perfect world. We have to make that perfect world within our own behaviors and actions. I wondered, as a result of all this travel, obviously you've been leaning a lot on our friends, and we always have lots of phone calls. And one of the topics we talked about a lot is that we are, let's face it,
we're not so old.
And we're like at the crossroads of like making and developing roots, I would say. I traveled a lot when I was younger, and I think maybe I got it out of my system, and that's why I moved. I have basically stayed in the UK since I was a kid, or since I was like a teenager. And I wondered, in your case, do you view China as your home, or do you want to go back to the UK and put your roots there? Like, how do you, where are you in that life journey in terms of wanting to go back to a home? And where is that home?
So I think at this current stage, I, as you know, right, I haven't quite decided for me and for my family where that would be. I mean, ideally, I would like to have a home both in Asia and in the UK. Mm-hmm. And I think currently that is the case. And I also think that, you know, given things that will happen post-COVID, a lot of countries are becoming increasingly more nationalistic. You know, you hear sad stories about racism in the US, also in the UK to an extent, also in China. I think it's really important for everybody who has had the privilege to grow up in a multicultural background to keep an open mind, you know, and really, really be vociferous about having an open mind and, you know, living in a world where we still believe that globalization is a good thing. Because increasingly you might think that your voice is becoming a minority and becoming a voice that's becoming less and less popular, right, in the mainstream media. If you read, I don't know, from Wall Street Journal to, you know, just Chinese press as well, I think every single country has something to say that makes sense for their own perspective. And I think everyone that has had this multicultural experience, we're all humans at the end of the day, right? I think there's more similarities and differences. So for me, like, I very much see the UK as my home. My but there are also a lot of things I really, really enjoy with China and with living in China. And I think, it's very hard to answer. I'm not sure if I've given an adequate reply.
No, it's okay. I suspect you're having this internal battle yourself, right? Like, where do you want to settle? I mean, ideally, you want to live in a world where you can do both and you can travel both. But in the future, I presume we've talked about family and kids and the kind of practicalities that you don't really want to spend 6 months in one place, 6 months in another if you have kids, I suspect. Honestly, I mean, that could be a thing. But is there differences in so there's the work culture and then there's the social culture. Now, I've heard there is a culture in some parts of China where you have to do a lot of like socializing and drinking. And that, to me, as someone that doesn't drink, I find that really scary. And it puts me off a lot. Is that true, or is that just a rumor? And does that stop after a certain level, age?
So I think, first of all, the drinking culture definitely does exist, right, in some parts of society. But as you can imagine, China's a huge place, and there's so many different tiers and segments of society. So it's very hard to say if there is some things that you have to do. In my circle, I think everyone drinks for fun, right? There isn't a thing where people expect you to drink at work. But obviously, if you work in certain lines of work, and if you work in client relationships or a specific type of clients, local clients you have to meet or deal with, then maybe there's more drinking involved. And I think, you know, maybe I'm being too optimistic, but I think ultimately we are the masters and we are the owners of our own lives. And how we live, how we make the most out of this life is down to us. And I think everyone should take ownership and responsibility for their lives. So there are, you know, other factors out of your control in the wider community of choosing where you are, choosing your company, fostering that wider environment. But I think you have a lot of autonomy in another day.
Okay. I mean, that sounds reassuring. Another question that I think a lot of people are interested in is kind of diversity. I'm a very strong advocate, and in the UK, certainly, there's a huge push on diversity, including women in tech. And I wondered how that culture permeates in Shanghai, in your company. Is it diverse? Is there a kind of a very masculine culture there, or is there not? It'd be really interesting to hear from your perspective and whether you felt inclusive and there's career opportunities for you, and you have role models as well within your ecosystem.
Yeah, I think with Alibaba, definitely there is a lot of female leaders. There's a lot of females who are very senior in the organization. I think there's a stats like something like 45% of managers are women. But I do think, you know, in the wider society, depends on the industry. I think in the tech industry, in the wider society, there is a lot of male in tech industry, just having, you know, being that, I don't know, the nature of the job. I also think that more conversation needs to be discussed and talked about, like organizations like Lean In or organizations where, you know, you have a lot of kind of female voices. That's something that's increasingly on the rise, right, in Shanghai, but in China in general. But I think, you know, there's always more room to discuss with that. To be honest, I think less on the workspace, but more on how women are perceived and the rights to protect women. I think for me, that's the key. I'm not sure you followed, but recently there's been quite a few laws about young girls who are, I guess, being molested. And there's some cases around that by very rich businessmen. And, you know, there's been quite a big kind of social incident in China. Mm. And the law, in terms of how it's currently being set up, I think it's trying to be changed, but that's in like a discourse, right? Like, can people, you know, just because... So one of the instances, I'm not sure how much you want to put into this, but one of the instances quite interesting is... there's this really famous, very famous lawyer, and he's also a very successful businessman who was on the board in the past of, I think, HTC or ZTE, one of these really big companies. He had a girlfriend, a wife of sorts, and then somehow adopted the daughter of the wife, and it turns out that he was kind of sexually abusing this girl for the last 2 years. But then their relationship was almost more like, you know, girlfriend, boyfriend. But she is 16 and he's like 45, right? Obviously something is not right with that. But then legally, he's actually a really famous lawyer, right? And he, you know, legally, if you're over the age of 16, you have consented to this relationship. But the whole idea was that, you know, has been living with her since she's 14. There's a lot of things where, you know, she can't really discuss. So this whole thing has been a massive discussion within China as a whole. People have talked about it. What do you think about the law? Should you try and change this, right? So I think there's a lot of things along these lines about the balance between power, money, politics, and where women place in that role and how fragile young girls could be, right? And that's something that should be talked about more in society.
And so, I mean, that sounds like a very dodgy situation. Hopefully the media coverage will make that conversation become less of a taboo, because I reckon there's probably other stories out there.
So it's been a huge media story, but the issue right now is legally he hasn't actually done anything wrong, because, you know, legally wise, they didn't have any sexual relationship until she was 16. Which is kind of consented by the law, but there's a lot of stuff you can argue behind that, right? And he's a lawyer, so it's difficult.
Well, maybe the law will change, maybe. And what about, I presume you've seen it through China, but of course there's been a lot of Black Lives Matter movements and the horrible situation with George Floyd in America. I wondered whether that has permeated in any way in the Chinese culture. And I reflect in particular because, I mean, it's strange, right? Because I'm an ethnic minority in the UK, but you go to China and it's flipped, right? We are no longer ethnic minorities, but you probably see the ethnic minorities in your workplace who are not Chinese, obviously, but you probably have more empathy over what they might be going through in a way that maybe otherwise you would not. So I wondered whether... How is the ethnic diversity in your company or in the work culture in Shanghai? And have you seen discrimination, including with the...
So, Johnny, I think you raised a really good point. And I think the honest truth is, I think there is a lot more still to be done, even in cities like Shanghai or China, you know, in wider China, in terms of supporting things like Black Lives Matter movement and having more diversity, right? Because as you know, in China, Han is like the largest homogenous ethnicity in the world. And I think a lot of times people actually, because you look a certain way and if you look Asian, you're almost instantly accepted as being Asian or being Chinese, even though you might think very differently to the average Chinese person on the street. So I think that's a really interesting point, because it's almost like the other way around, right? In the UK, it's like, because you look different, people instantly assume you think differently. But in China, it's like, because you look the same, people instantly assume you think the same, which you might not. So I think that's a really interesting but ironic comparison. And I think, yeah, there's more to be done, really, in China on that point of embracing more diversity, for sure.
Certainly in the UK, there's been a lot of people who are saying the UK is a racist country and all that. And I actually think every country has its challenge, right? And in some ways, I would say the UK is one of the more progressive ones, frankly, because it has London, which is a global city. And so I think we all have to learn more. I need to learn more as well, I think. Just because we're BAME doesn't mean we get all the other BAME communities, but we have some shared challenges. It's been a wake-up call for a lot of us in the community, including in the British Chinese community. And we need to defend our friends in whichever community they are in. I wondered also, because of COVID, can you walk me through how, between, let's say, January and now, how the lockdown happened or not happened? Because, of course, in the UK, and you, of course, went to UK for a bit as well, so you should definitely talk about that story. Because, of course, in the UK, we were pretty much locked down the 20th-ish of March, and it's now phasing out. But the journey in China was a little bit different. And I wanted to get your take on how that happened on the Shanghai or China side.
So I think, personally, I was very lucky, because when we broke out in China first, which was end of January, beginning of February, that was just after Chinese New Year, right? And I was in the UK at the time. And I remember when things first started happening, that was based first in Wuhan City, then slowly kind of spread out to wider China. For the first period, there was a huge shortage of masks and medical supplies. And then obviously China started recovering, I think it was something time by the end of Feb, beginning of March. So I actually returned to China in the beginning of March. And everybody returning then had to do a 14-day quarantine. It's still this case right now. So everyone is staying either in a government-sponsored hotel on their apartment for 14 days. And then in the 14 days, there's no contact with anybody else. And basically just observing if you have any other symptoms, right? I live in Shanghai. And then since then, to be honest, there's been no new, I think, cases coming internally in Shanghai. All of the cases are externally coming into China. And obviously, they closed down the border. They've stopped international flights, I think, unless absolutely necessary. So Shanghai has pretty much gone back to normal, I would say, since like the beginning of May. So we're all wearing masks wherever you go. So in any kind of public spaces, whether it's cafe, offices, everyone's wearing a mask, and there's a temperature check.
Yeah.
So that's something that's being implemented across the nation. But I think in terms of, you know, life, it's pretty much going back to normal. I went clubbing the other day and went drinking, and things were fine.
So clubs are still open, like
clubs
literally everything's
bars
open.
Bars have reopened. Wow. But people can only go in if you pass that check, right? So there is a check on your health code, temperature check, yeah.
That's pretty impressive. And of course, our condolences to those that have been suffering from this horrible pandemic. My final kind of segment is about the British Chinese community a bit more, because I know it's a topic that you're very passionate about. And even though you've abandoned us and crossed to the other side of the world, I know you haven't forgotten. And I think you are inherently still British Chinese in terms of your outlook. And no doubt through our conversations, you always have this yearn to come back to the UK. And so I wondered if you had a viewpoint of, well, firstly, give me your analysis of the British Chinese community. How are we doing as a group? And do you have any advice on how we can empower our community a bit more so that it has a stronger presence in areas that we traditionally have not seen, for example, in the media, even in technology, in civic life?
First of all, I think I'm definitely not qualified to give any sort of opinion or judgment on the community. But I think what I can say is, in my very limited and small circle experience of having good friends, very talented good friends like yourself and other, you know, British Chinese people who are in different fields, right? Whether it's medicine, whether it's acting, drama, music, I know tons and tons of talented BBCs, probably as you know, as with any other community. And yeah, and I think one thing I just want to say is it's really that offering and the spirit to help each other out, right? So as I've mentioned, I think I've been really lucky to have this group of like-minded, similar aged individuals who are in different fields, and everyone really is working their own part. And I think one thing that we want to do more as a British Chinese community is how can we leverage on each other and build something that stronger together. And I think it's not just with a British Chinese community, right? Like a wider British Asian community. To the extent, I think, you know, it's highlighting the different things and the different similar paths people go through as a minority. You know, what are you trying to make it as like an actress, as a Chinese-faced actress in mainstream UK media, or trying to make it as a politician in mainstream UK media? You have the same challenges. And I think it's about establishing a community, doing things like what you're doing right now, having an online platform, having a forum where people can come together and just share experiences at the very least. And if not, exchange resources, exchange experiences, leverage upon channel networks. That's kind of how the community grows and individuals grow.
Well, thank you, really. I think that's a really kind of positive way to sum up that journey. And also, I have been very grateful for your personal help in my kind of, I suppose, my media or political career. You gave the opening intro to one of my campaign launches. It actually shows that even if the British Chinese community or any community goes and gets scattered across the world, they come back, right? You come back and enhance the network. And it's not so binary as, you know, you have to be based in a specific geographic
area. Yeah, we live in a global world now, right?
Go beyond.
Like, you know, especially with Zoom and I think also with post-COVID, we'll be in an even more globally ready and globally connected world, because business has to be conducted, you know, via video calls and Zoom calls. So I think there's a lot of opportunities to be seen, and the type of work and the way we work will change dramatically after COVID.
Amazing. Now, let's do some shout outs. So I know that not only are you a wonderful technology leader, you're also a really impressive presenter, right? And so I want to make sure that people get the opportunity to find you. If you need an amazing MC for a wedding or for a, well, or for a thousand weddings or through a launches. So what is the best way to contact you? Is it on Instagram? Is it through LinkedIn? And what would be the handles for that? And I'll mention that. And I'll also
best
put it on
the best way to reach out to me
memo.
Is probably on LinkedIn.
Okay.
LinkedIn slash Rui-Chen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Oh,
there's
awesome.
Only one Rui-Chen in the world because my name is very odd.
Really?
Yeah, you'd be surprised, audience, how many times I use the word really when I speak to really. I don't know if it's a psychological thing. It probably is, but I say really, really. Oh my God, why? You know, I never say really as a, normal, as a word
really.
Until I speak to you really.
Okay.
See how confusing again? do you have any parting comments that you want to say, anything to close?
Yes, and thank you for interviewing me, Johnny. But I just want to say, I think especially if you are a young person or anyone who is tempted to come to Asia, have this experience or work in the internet space, I'm very happy to share my background, share my experiences and see if I could be of any help to you. And then finally, you know, this is going to be too sentimental, but my favorite band, Coldplay, the song Life is as Short as the Falling of Snow. I think that's super true. So just be true to who you are, be true to yourself, and the most out of every day.
Wow, that is so powerful. And rest assured, really, in our first few episodes last year, we had so many viewers. And not only that, we had free university dissertation citations for the podcast. And so people from a wide range of audiences do listen to this, and I think they will probably come and reach out to you too. So thank you so much for your time. I'm very grateful. Please stay safe out there. I am confident that you'll come back to the UK at some point and then we can hang out. And then we will continue our journey together. So thank you very much. Really.
Thank you for having
me on.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. Well, that was my interview with Rui. I hope you found it really, really interesting. I've used the word really again. Oh gosh. But yeah, I hope it was something that you learned from, and I certainly learned a lot from that conversation. And please, please, if anyone wants to take up Rui's offer of help, then do add her on LinkedIn. I'm sure she'd be more than happy to take it up. And hopefully over time, I'm gonna create more content. So please do follow me on Twitter, johnny2_luk. So that's johnny2_luk. Or on Instagram, which is johnjohnluk, johnjohnluk. Also find me on LinkedIn, which is johnny.luk, johnnyluk. So please take care, and we will continue these conversations in the future. Bye.